From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette, and you're listening to Idaho Matters. In 1941, aspiring writer Toshio Mori sent the manuscript for his first book to Caldwell Bay's Caxton Printers, hoping to get his collection of fiction stories about the problems of the Japanese people living in America published. Well, Caxton's founder liked the book, so they set a date to publish it. 5 days later, Japan bombed Pearl Harbor. And a couple of months later, Mori and his family were sent to an internment camp in Utah, and the publishing company decided to delay printing the book. It would take another 8 years after World War II ended, but eventually Caxton decided to publish the book, making Mori the first Japanese-American to publish a book of fiction. Alessandra Miragalea is an associate professor and archivist at Boise State's Albertsons Library, and he'll be talking about this story on Thursday at Boise State. We're lucky enough to have him joining us today to talk more about this. Alessandra, welcome to Idaho Matters.
Thank you for having me.
So first off, tell us about Toshio Mori.
He was an American citizen born to parents who themselves were Japanese immigrants. He was born around 1910, and he grew up in Oakland, California. And he worked starting in his teens at his family's nursery, tending flowers and growing plants. But in high school, a teacher really encouraged him to start writing and to write more. And he took to that, and he fell in love with writing fiction stories. And though he had to work full time in his family's nursery, he carved out several hours each evening from around 10 p.m. until 2 a.m. every day to write and to work on producing these stories that he eventually wanted to get published.
And what did he write about? I mean, what were his stories about? I mean, I did mention, you know, the Japanese experience in America. So were those kind of all the themes?
Yeah, he wrote about his neighborhood. He took the and fictionalized his neighbors and people he met in school or on the street or on the bus, and wrote about their lives and their experiences. And he grew up in Oakland and San Leandro, California, and he took that real city and fictionalized it as the town of Yokohama. And so he took his neighborhood as his subject and wrote about his community.
How did you find out about him?
My larger research project is on Caxton Printers, which, as you mentioned, is based in Caldwell, Idaho, and they've been around for over 100 years. And the company was founded by James Gibson, and he had a unique publishing philosophy in that he wanted to publish writers who had been rejected by other publishing firms, who couldn't get a voice anywhere else. And he wanted his publishing house to be able to showcase and to highlight those works by people that wouldn't have been able to get published elsewhere. And in fact, Mori tried to publish his stories with several New York publishers and other publishers from around the country, and he kept getting rejected. In fact, he liked to quip that he had enough rejection slips to paper a room. So he had little luck with some of the larger publishing houses. And so then he turned to Caxton and found a willing and excited publisher there.
Well, and what a forward-thinking publisher, right? To say, to give voice, really, to more of these potentially marginalized writers. And so I'm curious, what was it that made James Gibson, that made Caxton say yes to publishing Mori's book?
I have a quotation from Gibson, and with his team of editors who reviewed the manuscript, he called Toshio Mori's book a good book, and it is rather important as it is the first writing dealing with Americans born of Japanese parents and tells in understandable and unvarnished language the problems of the Japanese. So he recognized the importance and significance of Toshio Mori's stories and why they would be interesting to a national audience.
Okay, so then so they say yes to publishing the book. Then it's December 2nd, 1941, when Caxton said it would publish the book, and they're going to do this in the next year. So let's fast forward 5 days from December 2nd, 1941. Japan bombs Pearl Harbor. And then a few months after that, Mori is sent to an internment camp. So where did he spend the rest of the war? Was he in this internment camp in the entirety of the war?
Yeah, from 1942 until the war's end, he was at the Topaz War Relocation Center, as it's officially known. And he did keep writing while he was interned in at Topaz. And he worked for the center's literary, the literary magazine. And he mm-hmm. maintained a correspondence with Caxton, still expressing interest in getting his book published and saying, hey, I'm still writing and I'm producing more stories here. And then it took until the end of World War II for Caxton to revisit the manuscript, and then they finally published it in 1949.
So Caxton is, as we mentioned, and as you just said, they did hold off on publishing the book until 1949. I am assuming some of the reasons would be that this book would not have been well received at the time.
Yeah, that was Gibson's thought on it, and his staff thought really hard about, can we still publish it even after the attack on Pearl Harbor? But it was really that in February of 1942, when President Franklin Roosevelt issued Executive Order 9066, sending and mandating and forcing the relocation of over 100,000 Japanese residents of Japanese descent into these camps, that Gibson and Caxton decided to hold off and say, let's wait until after the war.
Mm-hmm. So when the war ended, Maury was released from the internment camp. Where did he go after that?
He went right back to Oakland, the Oakland area. And in fact, he lived in Oakland the entirety of his life, with the exception of those few years in Topaz.
Hmm. So did Caxton get back in touch with him after the war, or did he get in touch with them? Like what happened to eventually get the book published?
Yeah, Gibson, Caxton's president, certainly hadn't forgotten about the manuscript. And in a letter shortly after the end of the war, he wrote to Maury and said, Caxton is picking up the pieces and we're trying to get back to publishing books that we had committed to. And it said that it's still a book worthy of being published.
Mm. So I'm curious then. So the book gets published in 1949. First off, what was the name of the book?
Yokohama, California. He modeled it sort of after Sherwood Anderson's book, Winesburg, Ohio, which is also a collection of sketches of community life in a small mm-hmm. town. And that was what Maury used as his model. So Yokohama, California is representative of this fictionalized Oakland community and tells just little vignettes of life in that community.
So how was the book received then in 1949?
It was really well received, and it was reviewed in national publications. Maury was described as a natural born writer, a fresh voice, and even spontaneous. But sadly, despite these positive reviews, the book just didn't sell very well. For whatever reason, the sales weren't there. And so Maury sort of slid into oblivion and wasn't really well known, and had difficulty finding publishers for other works. He continued to write. He wrote several novels, more short stories, but for the next several decades, he really had difficulty finding a publisher for his work.
So Caxton only published the first book.
That's correct. His first collection of short stories.
And do we know why they didn't want, or, you know, decided not to publish the other works that he wrote?
Yeah, I think that the timing wasn't right. And Caxton and Gibson really supported Maury and hoped he did well. But the fact that Yokohama, California just didn't sell well, I think led to them to not be as interested in some of the future works.
Mm. Well, and it's interesting, too, because even though it was well received critically, I mean, you know, there was still, I think, you know, such, you know, what's the right word? Such probably anger, such resentment towards the Japanese Americans, towards Japan. I would assume that would have played into people not wanting to buy the book.
Yeah, and Gibson and Mori himself really hoped for strong sales among the Japanese communities in California and throughout the United States. And also, for whatever reason, again, despite the positive reviews, the book just didn't sell even within the Japanese American communities.
What was it like for you to research Mori's life?
It's been really fascinating, and it's still been ongoing. I was able to get in touch with Toshio Mori's only surviving son, Stephen Mori, who was very generous with his time and access to his collection of material, and just being able to provide and fill in some details about his father's life. So that was been really rewarding to be in touch with Toshio Mori's son.
What stood out to you about Toshio Mori? Like, is there something that that you know you'll take with you?
Yeah, I think his persistence and perseverance, not only in face of having to work a full-time job in his family's nursery and only being able to write for a few hours in the evening, but then also his dedication to continue writing even in when he was incarcerated in the internment camps in the 40s. And then even for the next several decades, he kept writing. And then finally, right before he passed away in 1980, in the last few years of his life, the next generation of Japanese Americans really took an interest in Toshio Mori and lifted him up as this founder, as this pioneer of Japanese American literature. And he was invited to several conferences to speak and to read from his work. And in fact, he was able to find a publisher finally for a second collection of short stories and one of his novels. So these came out in the 1970s when there was a stronger interest in specifically Japanese American literature.
Can people still find his work? I mean, is it, I mean, in bookstores? I mean, is it because I know, you know, sometimes things, you know, go out of publication.
Yeah. So Yokohama, California did go out of print for several decades, but thankfully, University of Washington Press has released it and reprinted it. And so it's available through University of Washington Press. And then there are plans in the works to bring out those later works of Toshio Mori. One, the second collection of short stories has been released just last summer by the publisher Modern Times Publishing. And then we're working on getting Toshio Mori's novel republished as well.
And I'm assuming you've read his works.
Yes, I have.
And what were your thoughts after reading his first book?
I think they're fantastic insights and snapshots of life. I felt as a reader, I felt invited into Toshio Mori's neighborhood, into his community, and the characters are local and specific to him, but the experiences and interactions are universal, and that's what makes it a joy to read.
Well, I so appreciate you coming in and talking with us about this and about Toshio Mori and bringing him to life for all of us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. We have been speaking with Alessandra Miragalia, who is an associate professor and archivist at Boise State's Albertsons Library. He will actually be talking about Japanese writer Toshio Mori's story this Thursday. That will be at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute in Boise. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Race might be a hot topic right now, but for so many of us, talking about race is nothing new. On the Code Switch podcast from NPR, we go beyond the headlines and we go deep. Listen now.